Thanks for tuning in to the Boiler Express podcast. Join us each week as we dive into all things Purdue sports. You'll hear in-depth analysis of our previous and upcoming games, as well as interviews with players and people involved in the Purdue sports fandom. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and YouTube for our live stream shows as well.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another Boiler Express podcast. And as you can see tonight, not a lot of us were able to show up for the show tonight, just like our team on Saturday. Sorry, had to get that out there. But welcome back, guys, to another episode. We're going to talk about the Notre Dame game. We're going to talk about Oregon State tonight. But we're all just here to kind of vent for a little bit and, talk about it and move on. Frank, you were there, and the atmosphere leading up to the game sounded like it was incredible. You guys were like, it's jam-packed. There's so many people here. What was it like before the kickoff?
Yeah, the hype was real. So I got to my parking spot about 3 hours, a little over 3 hours before the game. And it was bumper-to-bumper traffic, people everywhere. I mean, and for context, I got to the Indiana State game about the same amount of time beforehand, and it was a ghost town. Now, granted, I mean, that was 9 a.m. versus 12:30 p.m., but yeah, I mean, the hype was real. I did get to see the players come off the bus and walk into the practice field. I mean, it was packed. People were running to make sure they got there on time. There was a palpable buzz around the stadium, and something I hadn't seen, honestly, in a while. Granted, it has been a while since I'd been to a home game before this season, but it was exciting. It was a really, really exciting atmosphere. I think a lot of people felt like we were going to give Notre Dame a run for their money. I think we all know it didn't end that way. But yeah, there's a lot of hype going into the game. It's the main takeaway. But Ross Abe was great. I was lucky enough to be on the West End, so I was in the shade, so it wasn't overly hot. But yeah, it was packed. Not an empty seat in the house, and unfortunate that things played out the way they did, given all that.
So, and this is a question for all of us here, not just if you're at the game, but when did you guys feel like this game was lost and there was no turning back? At like what point of the game did you feel that way?
I think when they hit 35 points.
Yeah.
I think because we got to what, 3 minutes left till halftime. It was 21-0. I think we had the ball. And I was kind of like, you know what? If we get even a field goal here, it'd be nice. You go in 21-3. You get the ball first in the second half. Maybe we get something, at least make a game out of it. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, like we know what happened. All of a sudden, you blinked and they put 21 more up. And now it's 42-0 at halftime instead of 21-3 or 21-0. So that was the point where it was like, all right.
That's actually before we went live. That's what I was telling Frank, is that like I went to the bathroom and it was 28-0. And I came back. I got something in the kitchen to drink or whatever. I came back and it was 42-0. And I was like, what happened? Yeah, it was. There's a lot of words that you could use for it. Abysmal is a really good one. It was rough.
Cody, comment here from Cody. When it was 28-0, I had to turn it off before I punched the TV. Cody, I know you said you were watching it with some Notre Dame family members. You'll have to let us know how that went.
Oh, God. I can't imagine. Notre Dame fans are notoriously pretty full of themselves and their football team, so I can't imagine.
Yeah, that.
No. They love their Notre Dame football and IU basketball, that's for sure.
The group in front of me was very loud, we'll just say, the entire time. And then I think right after halftime, they kind of stopped with their playful jabs. Let's say, I think they almost felt bad. That was so, at least they do have hearts, but you know, I want to pose a question to you guys, and there's some stats and some facts that I looked up, but you know, there are 14 players on this current team who played in a Big Ten West championship or Big Ten championship. In my opinion, those players should not have been shocked by what Notre Dame brought and the physicality that Notre Dame brought. You know, in my opinion, Notre Dame kind of out-physicaled Purdue. It wasn't a scheme. It wasn't a game plan issue. It was just Purdue came out undisciplined and underprepared, in my opinion. And, you know, we saw it was the worst loss in program history. Oof. You know, we talked about the buzz before the game. We talked about the hype. But when we look at individuals, you know, like not to call out people individually, but I think I need to. I mean, Kydren Jenkins had a not a great game, just to put it bluntly. I mean, what's the reason there? Dylan Thienemann didn't have a great game. You know, what's the reason there? And I'm struggling to make sense how 22 guys can show up and just look so unprepared for that game. Mm-hmm. I want to blame coaching. I want to say that, like, well, that the only way that can happen is coaching. But how can a group of people collectively just have an off day? You know, and they're, you know, our offensive line is extremely talented and extremely deep and they're extremely experienced. How could they just collectively not be in sync? How can, you know, experienced guys on defense, guys who have played at Georgia, who transferred in, guys who have been, you know, on our team for 4 years, Dylan Thienemann, who played over 1,100 snaps last season, just collectively have a bad day, an off day. Now, I mean, granted, there's another team playing. You know, Notre Dame had some amazing athletes, but is it fair to put at least some of the blame on the coaching staff? Is what I want to ask. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not comparing Walters to Hazel like some people have. I'm not saying anyone should not be the coach. I'm just saying, do they deserve some of the blame?
I think absolutely. I mean, you had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. You had a bye week. You had an extra week to get your guys prepared, get them healthy and everything. And really, honestly, I mean, Indiana State wasn't that competitive of a game. So you almost had 3 weeks to get ready for Notre Dame, if you want to look at it that way. Honestly, the game was just flat out embarrassing. Like, the team just looked flat from the beginning. Nobody looked like they wanted to be there. I was listening to the coach's show, or not the coach's show, but his presser, yesterday. I think it was yesterday. And he called the game, said that, you know, we got punched in the mouth and we flinched. And I was like, no, you got bludgeoned with your own hammer at your own house. You know, there's a lot of things that game was. It wasn't a punch to the mouth, but, yeah. So I think coaching can absolutely be part to blame, but I also think that I don't think these guys are terrible coaches either, and I want to see them figure it out. So,
yeah, I mean, I understand what he's saying with the punch in the mouth thing, because the thing I got from it, and it was touched by somebody in the comments, that, yeah, the way they ran their offense, it was like we couldn't stop them, and then our own offense couldn't kind of get out of their own ways. And so when I say, like, it was over when it got to, like, 28 to 35, what I mean was, like, there was no chance that I think we were going to show a lot of life in that game, because I didn't have a lot of faith in our defense stopping them at any point in the game. But at some point I was hoping, okay, can we at least start matching their scores and make it look somewhat respectable, and then also take away from their time of possession so they don't hit 66 freaking points. Yeah. But – you know, and Walters kind of said it too, that it's not, you know, yes, coaching staff bears some blame for it, but they all wear it. Like, everybody wears it. Like, Dylan Thienemann and the safeties to combine eight tackles, something like that. So, like,
I know, you know, specifically Thienemann had 4 missed tackles, which I think that's more than he had all last season.
Yeah. So, we can say the coaching staff didn't get him ready. There was also a lot of, and didn't get him in the right position or didn't have the right scheme. There was also a lot of times where the guys were right there to make a play and didn't. Right. And I
feel nothing about it with scheme, to be honest. I feel like, you know, like, the scheme was great, but just guys just got out physical.
The two scheme things I think that stuck out to me, and maybe you guys can speak on this or you saw something different, is one, we were just not ready for pick plays. For whatever reason, we were not ready. Like, I saw some against Indiana State, because obviously you have a true freshman in Terrion Grant out there. I don't know how much Nylon Green was maybe a leader with that secondary, at least up on the line. And of course, it's hard for Thienemann to communicate, and he's not really going to try to communicate a whole lot when he's 30 yards off the line of scrimmage. So
right.
It troubled me a little bit in Indiana State. And then I saw it bear out in this game when they ran pick play after pick play after pick play. And that action, we just could not decide, are you going to stay on this guy and I stay on this guy, or are you just stay inside, I'm going to stay outside? You know, whoever ends up whatever direction, that's the guy we're guarding. So we really, really struggle with that on defense, I think. And then offensively, I think we just weren't ready for that huge step up in not just talent, but also the pressure and the schemes that came our way. So, you know, this is, I think, part of where you get in trouble with, we talked about with the Indiana guy we had on last year, from, was it Often Daunted, which I think they changed their name now, about how do you schedule? Do you schedule three cupcakes in non-conference and then just get into conference? And this is where I struggle. Like, I understand the concept of, like, let's try to get three winnable games and then go 3-6 in conference at least, and then at least we got a bowl game. But I think we need to step up a little bit from Indiana State, because, you know, to go from playing Indiana State and then having a bye week and then playing a Notre Dame team that just lost at home to Northern Illinois, like, and they just threw everything at us. Like, they ran 6, 7, 8 guys, it seemed like, at times at us. Just to, and there was – you know who our best pass blocker was rating-wise for the game?
Who?
I do, yes.
Kind of a trick question.
Yeah.
Mockaby. I have no idea.
Mockaby was our best pass
blocker. Evan Mockaby.
God, so he, even on the blitz pickups, like, he was doing a good job, and they even mentioned it at least once or twice. I remember them saying when they were blitzing a linebacker at the middle, like, hey, the running back got him, but Card was still spooked and threw the ball earlier, threw a bad football. So, like, we were trying to kind of learn on the fly, and this is still, to me, it was like the first game with a brand-new O-line for us, because I don't think Indiana State really even counted as a game, to be honest with you. So I think that's kind of what you saw bear out, and I think that's,
you can't take that win away from me, Russ. I swear to God.
Well, no. I know. It went out to count, but, like, I mean, it was a field day. It wasn't like any game where we were worried. And so, like, it's just – it's like playing a game against, like, a local middle school and then going and playing in one of the top five high schools in the state. Like, you're going to see a little bit of a difference there, right? And if it punches you in the mouth and then you start panicking, which I think our guys did, like, they started panicking and pressing, it doesn't work. It's not going to work.
It's just, so, Russ, like, do you know, so we had our starting five offensive linemen, Hartwig, Stewart, Wingfield, Marcus Bowe, and Musa. Do you know how many snaps total were played by backups in this game?
I know it was only Bowe and Hartwig that played all 53 snaps. I know that there was, I think Grant played like 19 snaps or something like that. And then we had another couple backups. I think one or two more backups. I think we played 7 total linemen, if I remember correctly.
We played 7 total offensive linemen in the game. I have it at 20 total snaps played by the other two guys combined that aren't our starting five. Which, you know, again, all summer we heard about this depth at offensive line, and then when we're not subbing out offensive, it just raises a question for me. I mean, here we have a comment here from Vinny: having 53 snaps is glaring. So does that mean that maybe some of this depth we've heard is, I mean, could have been the level of competition, could have been the fact that, you know, Hudson Card, what did I have it here? He was under pressure on 43% of his plays.
Yeah. So I mean, I've got 40 snaps, or sorry, 39.
39 snaps played by.
So it says, yeah, Grant played 21 and Sales played 18. Joshua Sales at left tackle, or he kind of got split between the tackle positions, but yeah.
Okay. So better than 20. But yeah, I mean, why are we only playing, you know, 7 offense? There's just, the radio said it best, Russ, and that Purdue fans look to get answers from this game, and they got questions instead. I have a ton of questions now. I have a whole lot of questions, but I think, and there's a great comment here that I'm going to pull up right now. I'm ready to see how this team responds, and I think that's everything.
There we go. I'm back.
Yeah, Damon, you vanished for a second, but yeah, I think that's everything.
I hear you guys. Can you guys hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can hear you.
I can't hear you guys at all.
Yeah, some technical difficulties here, but yeah, the main question, right? Yeah, is how do we respond? Do we hang our head? Does the team hang their head, or do they respond kind of like how Notre Dame did? You know, Notre Dame responded after getting embarrassed on a national stage. We just got embarrassed on a national stage. You know, how does Purdue respond? And Purdue takes on an opponent who, you know, was kind of in a similar situation, and that they truly thought, myself included, that they were going to be very competitive, if not beat Oregon. And then they got embarrassed. So this next game, you know, is going to determine a lot. And a question I wanted to ask you all is what has to happen against Oregon State to kind of calm the storm to a degree? Is it a win? Is it a convincing win? Is it to look competitive? But what's that yardstick now look like for Purdue, Russ?
I think it depends on what fan.
Why can't I not hear you guys? This is so weird.
I think it depends on what fan. Because, like, if you're talking to the fans that are, like, the ultra negative, right? Like, the certain group that's always the negative group that I won't name again by name. But I think even if we beat Oregon State, they're going to go, yeah, but now they've already got two losses and they got dog walked by Oregon already, too. And they barely beat a FCS team in the first game and blah, blah, you know. So it's like, I can see for a large part of the fan base it not doing anything, but like, I think realistically, and for me, this Oregon State game might be the most important game in Ryan Walters' Purdue coaching career. Because I think it could very well be a turning point to say either, okay, that clearly was not the team that we're used to seeing, and it's not the team that you even see on the field against Oregon State. Like, you're just going to get there and go, wow, yeah, Notre Dame was an anomaly. Or you're going to go, okay, we might have something to worry about here.
Also, I just want to tell Dylan that I did not unplug my mic. I unplugged my headphones that are plugged into my mic. So, yeah.
See, we're not ignoring it. Oh, wow. So, I think Frank and I both hit it at the same time.
So
the conversation is so invigorating, though.
Was there anything else that you guys were talking? I couldn't hear you guys for like probably 2 or 3 minutes.
Oh, so we were talking about what has to happen at Oregon State, you know, to sort of calm the storm. And Russ, I think you make a good point that it's not going to be the same for any two people. Yeah. For myself included, I really think anything less than a win for me, my spirits are low. I'm not feeling good. I mean, the line, what is it, 4.5 right now? 4.5?
I think it was up to 6.
Oh, up to 6. It opened at 4.5, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, anytime it's under a touchdown, it's effectively a 50-50 game. And I think that, you know, we need to come out on the right side of this to feel a little bit better. But one thing I wanted to ask about, too, is there's been a lot of talk about, you know, well, Purdue's behind in NIL. Purdue is not competitive from an NIL standpoint, and that's, you know, we're just not getting good players. Do you guys buy that? Do you think there's validity to that? Do you think that's just smoke?
I don't think that we're not getting good players, because Walter's already gotten more or just as many 4-stars in his year and a half at Purdue, or not even year and a half, like 1 year at Purdue, than, you know, Coach Brohm got in all 6 years that he was here. So I don't think talent wise, and I mean, Jamal Edrin, stud wide receiver, very, very good wide receiver. Hudson Card can be a very good quarterback when he's not terrified and fighting for his life in the pocket. So I think that the talent's there. I just don't know why it's not translated. I mean, Dylan Thienemann, you got Kydren Jenkins. I think Kydren Jenkins, I don't know if you guys talked about this or not, I think he needs to be taken out of the linebacker position and put back on the edge. I don't think he has the speed for the linebacker position. I think he got beat quite a bit. You know, he wasn't able to set the edge when he was coming to tackle somebody. And sorry, it's like got choked on my spit there. And that's another thing too, is I noticed like this year and last year, Walters has continued to put guys in positions that they never played before or just aren't comfortable playing. Like last year it was, I think Nick Caraway kind of played like a linebacker role at some point, or Nick Scorton, come back Nick. And then, who else was it on defense? Sanusi Kane, he like had him in a weird role that he's not used to playing. So I think he's putting guys in positions that they're not used to, that they're not familiar with. And he, like, I get it that he wants to run his defense, and but everybody has also said he needs to have his specific player profile to run his specific defense. And I feel like instead of running the defense that you want to have with the players that you currently have, you need to run the defense that you can have with the players you currently have. So I would like to see that on defense.
I'm just kind of tired about the NIL stuff, because, and I'm not saying like a boomer, I'm tired of it. Like, I wish it was out of sports, blah, blah, whatever. I'm just saying, like, every school complains. Like, Tennessee this last week has been complaining about and trying to find new ways to get NIL raised because they don't have the NIL to do this, that, blah, blah, whatever. Tennessee's probably a top five, if not top five, top 10 financially funded program in the nation. So, and they're complaining about NIL, which basically just means everyone's going to always complain about NIL as a way to like get people to donate more money. So, and I'm just not hearing that. Like, we're still in the Big Ten. Like you said, Damon, we're still getting the guys that are four stars. We're getting more four stars than last year and a half, right? And then Painter on the basketball side, right? We make the Final Four after NIL has been around for 3 or 4 years. When people say Purdue's not going to last in NIL, well, then we go make a Final Four in basketball. You know, and Purdue, yes, Purdue's never going to be on the level of
cheat code, though.
You know, Purdue's never going to be on a high state. Purdue's never going to be on the high state level or the Michigan level or Alabama, Tennessee, whatever. And we're always going to have the fear of, well, when a guy has a good season, he's just going to, somebody else is going to buy him away. And that's just reality. Like, that's what's going to happen, right? Like, you know, even Ohio State is going out and getting a transfer quarterback every year. Oregon's got a transfer quarterback this year. So, like, they're going to steal it from anybody that's not one of the top 5 or 10 programs. So you just got to be ready to deal with that.
I hate it's that, though. I don't want Purdue to be like a farmer program. I don't want them to be like a double-A baseball team feeding, you know, their Ohio State's next athlete or whatever. I hate that.
But Alabama's even had their controversies at quarterback where they can only start one guy, so then one or two guys transfers and goes play somewhere else, right?
Like Clemson as well. Clemson's had that problem multiple times. But does Northern Illinois have a better NIL situation than Purdue?
Right. Exactly.
they put up 200 rushing yards.
I'm thank God we don't play Northern Illinois this year. I'm just saying.
That, and I know the transitive property doesn't exist, only in mathematics, but I mean, Purdue can't be worse off than Northern Illinois in NIL. Right. The Gold Fedora guy, I appreciate you showing up. He's referring to Oregon State. Says the fan base is loud. They do the chainsaw thing, a third down. Stadium is new and gets rocking. Good.
I'm really bummed now that we didn't end up going to this game.
Yeah, that was one
for our trip about this year.
Dang. Talked about going to.
Would you be if we had bought that ticket after what happened Saturday? Would you still be like, yeah, let's go?
I've never been to Oregon. Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Got a ticket.
Corvallis is nice.
I would love to.
Rocky Top just raised all their tickets 10%.
Go meet Gold Fedora guy.
That's what it was. I knew I'd seen something. Thank you, Gold Fedora.
Okay. Yeah, that's a comment we got here from Mr. Gold Fedora guy. But Russ, you're a better like football rule expert than I am. My rules are a little bit more like fixed in basketball, but some of those pick plays, man, they didn't look like incidental rubs in my opinion.
Yeah. And Nick said it in the comments in our group thread, our text thread, that they rarely call offensive pass interference. There was a time where they used to emphasize pick plays and emphasize that you cannot do that. But there were, like you said, there were some obvious, like throwing the arm up to like check a guy to get a guy wide open, and they weren't calling it, and they just don't call that very often. So you've got to just find a way to deal with it. Like, it is what it is. Like,
yeah,
you know, I hate the whole, if it's not called, it didn't happen. Cause like, no, it happened. They just didn't call it. But at the end of the day, that's also a true statement, right? If they didn't call it, then you know, there's nothing then you can do. Yeah.
Well, there are some plays really in the first drive. Cause I was at the game, I was watching different things, but there are several plays in the first drive where you have that slot receiver kind of run a curl and he just lays a hit on the defender trying to get outside. It was Markevious Brown. It happened 2 times. Like, so it wasn't just like, I'm going to stop right here and create an obstacle for you to run around. It's like he lowered his shoulder and initiated contact. And I've seen that called.
What's the rule? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice.
You fool me, you ain't going to fool me again, right?
Fool me twice, shame on me, right? So shame on.
Mm-hmm. I was doing the George Bush version, but
oh, okay.
Yeah. But I want to circle back to a controversial topic, but I think it's one we need to talk about. In my opinion, anyone tell me that I'm wrong, I'm happy to have this conversation. But it seemed like Kydren Jenkins was a big part of their scheme. It really did. They wanted to run pre-snap motion to get him out of the box and run up the middle without him in the box. And they wanted to use pre-snap motion to get him covering someone. And then almost every single time you have Dylan Thienemann coming down to help. And now you have no one over a top and it's just a foot race at that point. It happened too many times for me to think that it was not part of the game plan. And then we saw a series where he didn't play right after that. And so I know Damon said that the Kydren Jenkins experiment maybe needs to come in. I don't know if I'm there yet, but it was a problem. I mean, it, Russ, that was the, I don't know if you saw, that was the worst grade he's ever gotten in PFF ever in his career this past game.
Well, and there was two guys on the team worse than him, two starters.
Yes, and, yes, there were.
And Thielen was only a point above him, point and a half and above him.
And so, it sucks too, because what I hate is that it's not that KJ is a bad player. He's just in a position that he is not comfortable in at all. It's not to his strength.
He led the Big Ten in pass rushing productivity last year, like, except for two guys who played like 10 snaps.
Like, is our depth in linebacker that bad?
It's not what the defensive line is, but where I'm at with it is, you guys might be right. I'm not, you know, and I fought it a little bit when it first happened, and then obviously we saw what happened with the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. So I kind of shut up about it. But right. The fact that, like, two guys that started the game had a worse rating than him, and Thieneman was barely better than him, and Thieneman's an All-American, you know, tells me, like, we might need to wait, because also, how are you going to, in a short week probably, because we have to travel earlier, I would guess, than some games to get Oregon State. In a short week, you're not going to be able to change it up. So we're probably going to see KJ in the same position this week. And I think this will be a better test to see, okay, is it just him? Because it's not like he stood out as the one bad piece against Notre Dame. We all sucked. Like, and I think the bigger scheme thing was the picking. And that pre-snap motion does tend to put the middle linebacker in the tougher position, and then the deep safety in the tough position. So I think that's why he and Thieneman both had the worst games rated-wise of their careers. But I'm just not ready to completely say this is not going to work, because, again, the jump from Indiana State to Notre Dame, scheme-wise, too, like, think about that. Like, I'm not – no disrespect to Indiana State, but, like, do you think they're scheming up the same stuff Notre Dame is offensively?
Well, no, but that's
they threw eight passes through 3.5 quarters of football.
But that's why I would say that it's not going to work, because I, at least when I was watching the game, I even saw then, and when they were playing Indiana State, that KJ – or Kydren Jenkins struggled to, you know, with his speed and everything, and he got blown by a few times. Now, sometimes, yeah, he made a great play, but he was also playing Indiana State. So I just don't know, as the competition's only going to get, you know, stay the same or, you know, get better. Now, obviously, you know, it'll change a little bit, but it's not going to go back to an Indiana State level. So I don't know. I wish that we would just play guys where they're comfortable at and where they have the experience at right now, especially with when, you know, it'd be different if KJ was like a sophomore or something, but he's on his way out the door, you know?
Yeah. It's his fifth season playing football, a meaningful football too. And I start to question it when he was so good on the edge last season, and through two games, he's been okay at middle linebacker. And that just, I wonder if it's just a question of us being really thin at the linebacker position. And so we need him there by committee. I want to address Cody's comment here. Here's my question. Why does our fan base keep thinking that everyone has to be up to Coach Tiller's standards? Russ, as a historian, weren't Tiller's like numbers kind of skewed toward like the early part of his career? Like he was mostly like a 5-7, 7-5 coach, if I remember right.
Negative. I think in he was our coach for
Was
it 12 years and we went to 8 bowl games?
I think it was 10.
Eight or 10 bowl games. Okay, that's what I think it was. Yeah, I was thinking it was okay. 8 and 10, but 10 and 12. So, no, I mean, yeah, we had some good front loaded years, but we still went to several bowl games after that, you know.
Yeah, so he started 9-3 and then 9-4. And then 7-5, 8-4, 6-6.
He was 9-3 the first year?
Yeah. First year at Purdue, 1997. Alamo Bowl.
Ooh, I think 96 was his first year, wasn't it? I thought 96 was.
Nope. No, he was 10-2 at Wyoming, 1996.
Okay.
Looks like the historian title is up for grabs now, folks. Just,
But I mean, so like he had, but it looks like there is a 5-7, a 6-6, a 7-6. So it looks like he was a 500 with a handful of, you know, 3 or 4 good years, like, you know,
it's just like Brown plus.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and let's not forget, we fired Danny Hope for being a 500 coach too, as well.
And so that's, before we get too much into like the coaching staff, the history in Oregon State, I do want to hand out kind of two helmet stickers, right? Talk about two actually highlighted players that played good games.
I'll be curious if there are any of the mine.
Yeah, so, and I think one of them is definitely yours, which is Reggie Love III.
Reggie Love didn't get
didn't get a ton of opportunities, but 10 carries, 61 yards for a little over 6.1 yards a carry. Very solid play by him. And then Keelan Crimmins, man, our punter. Like we've got an Iowa level punter. Gosh, I got him down as 47.3 average. 10 punts for 47. That's almost 500 yards of punts, y'all. Like, dude was putting in work.
Yeah, and the very first punt of the game was funny because the guy who was fielding the punt, you know, pre-snap was right in front of me, and a second after that punt leaves his foot, he immediately turns around and is running like almost like he's gonna like catch a pass in stride. He did not expect that, and then that never happened again. He got back further, but yeah, he did not expect the leg that he had. So that was and when Walter said in the post game press conference that there was no positives, I was like, no, the punting and Russ, even the coverage and punting looked really good.
So, and also too, they were close to blocking about half of them.
Yeah.
So for him to avoid having any of them blocked and continue to stand in there and get off some booms, like that was impressive.
Yeah, I like DJ's comment here talking about Tiller's last game. I remember being at that game too. I think they beat IU 62-10. Yep, something like that. That
speech that was having us all in tears.
Yeah. Well, and didn't Purdue finish 4-8 that year? I don't think they did very well.
Yeah, we didn't make a bowl game that year. Yeah.
Yeah, they were 4-8. Yeah. Man,
the trick play against Michigan where it was like a shootout? It was like 48. Yeah, that hook and ladder play.
Well, it might have been. I don't know. I feel like that was one of the games I went to. I think that was a hope year because we beat Ohio State that year as well, but still went up 5-7.
Yeah, that game was awesome. I remember because my grandpa, he had the radio headset on listening to the game. And maybe like 8 or 9 years old at that point watching the game. And I have no clue what's happening. He's just like, it was a lateral. And I was like, what's going on? And that was a really fun offensive game because it was just a shootout. There was no defense on either side for that game. But
there's a question here about the offensive line, and I feel like the offensive line from the Notre Dame game has gotten quite a bit of heat. They didn't play well, especially for a unit who is as experienced as they are, but
they're huge too.
And no one's really talking about the defensive line, in my opinion. I mean, there's very, very little penetration there. And according to PFF, Purdue blitzed 26 times, only 9 quarterback pressures on those 26 blitzes. Just crazy. It's crazy. And this is against an offensive line that is young. Inexperience was heavily scrutinized coming into the game and candidly had some injuries throughout the game too.
It appeared we sent some blitzes and some pressure early, and that's when they started beating us on some home run balls. And so we tried to like start switching things up. But they were just so quick that anytime if we sent a blitz, they ran the other way, or they broke one up the middle, or we missed the tackle and we go from Thieneman having the guy down for a 3-yard gain to it's an 80 plus yard touchdown, you know? So I think we've talked about it before. I think it's from a fan perspective, you just got to forget about it, which, you know, most of us are never going to forget about it because it's the worst loss in program history. But from a team's perspective, they have, you know, if you're a coach that likes having teaching points and teaching videos, like actual physical, hey, this is what you did and this is what you need to do. They've got a ton of that. They got that for days. Like they can use this tape for weeks. And I'll tell you what, I guarantee you every team we play the rest of the season is also looking at this tape because they're going, hey, we play Purdue. Oh, that's the team that lost 66-7 to Notre Dame. Let's see what Notre Dame did and do that same thing because we're probably going to be able to pace them if we do that same thing. So you better believe that like Oregon State saw this tape and they're going to try to do the same pick action, send some of the same type of pressure to see how we handle it against them.
Yeah, I think that. You know, last season the mobile quarterback was kind of our kryptonite, and I hope that the rub route or the pick play isn't the equivalent this year. But you know, Leonard looked good on his feet. I thought. I mean, there were 2 third downs that he scrambled for a touchdown and slipped multiple tackles, and that was just hard to watch. And you ask, you know, when did you think it was over? But the second time he slipped through several Purdue defenders and into the end zone is when I felt like, okay, there's no way Purdue can win this game. because it was bad. Do you want to check some comments here? Defensive line, definitely a major concern, in my opinion, much more than the offensive line. I think they'll bounce back on the offensive line. The ends aren't just setting the edge at all. There's a
bring KJ back.
Bring KJ back. Yeah. I mean, Will Helt has looked really good even last season. I just wasn't his day. Wasn't anyone's day. Reggie Love had a good day, and Connor, whose name escapes me, had a great day as well.
I will say that's one thing that that I did like from listening to Walter's press conference. I think it was yesterday. He said, you know, we've seen Purdue, you know, he did make comments like, I don't care who we played, we still beat a team 49-0, but we also got ran out of our own home 66-7. So he's like, right now we're both teams, and it's up to us to decide which team that we want to be. No, you're good. Go ahead.
So I just, before we get too far away from that comment about the defensive line, do you notice anything about the PFF grades though, Frank?
I've noticed lots of things. What are you getting at?
Our worst five starters, four of those five were the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
So Madden, who we got on Madden for getting sucked in and not setting the edge, was our best rated defender.
He was.
Right? Health was second. And then two of our defensive tackles were third and fourth. And Emba and Brevard, Cole Brevard. So, like, you know, yeah, I feel like we didn't see what we want to see from our defensive line, but I don't think they were necessarily the problem. I think it was
I think when you look at pass rush specifically, I mean, three best pass rushers on the day were Dylan Thienemann, Jenkins, and Yanni. And I saw guys who aren't rushing consistently. But yeah, then you have CJ Madden, you know, after that. But yeah, just particularly in that category is where, you know, I feel like last season we were able to get a lot of pressure on the quarterback without having to blitz guys away from, you know, outside of the line.
Oh, that was another thing I wanted to ask. And I almost feel like it's basketball season with me bringing up this question, but why are we playing so much man to man? Why aren't we playing any zone or hardly any zone compared to how much we're playing man to man?
We actually played quite a bit of zone.
I thought we played a ton of man to man.
We also played a ton of zone, and that's when I think we switched from man to man to zone. And then they really started cooking us, because then we were like, passing guys off when we shouldn't have passed guys off, and it got ugly, because that's where we got some guys in space and we tried to make the tackle and they just missed the tackle, straight up missed the tackle.
I was actually surprised at how much zone I saw, but I think, you know, that was in response to the pick plays there. I mean, if I had to guess, but I think I was surprised they didn't mention it in the TV broadcast as well.
That's kind of how I noticed the zone was actually that they broke down a couple plays where they were toasting us and they pointed out the zones Purdue was playing. And I was like, yeah, that is weird. Like we usually play a lot of man to man, and we started out playing a lot of man to man, but yeah, it was like they cooked us on the pick plays passing, playing man to man. So then we switched to the zone and then went to a run scheme where they basically could just like get the movement they wanted. They knew where we were going to sit in the zones and just get the holes and get up the sideline or get up the middle.
Which maybe our defensive scheme sort of mimics what we see in NFL defensive schemes, where there is like really no true solid man or solid zone anymore, and that every scheme is kind of a hybrid of the two, and that you play man if your receiver does this, or you play zone if your receiver does that, and you know, I who knows, but yeah, it's all sorts of nuances to Walter's defense. Like we say, it doesn't have a name, but what I'll just ask you, what kind of leash do we give a coach who, you know, is a highly touted defensive guy, but we just haven't seen the results yet, you know, on defense? How much cushion do we give him for that?
I think probably 2.5 years.
Okay.
You know, I think we get midway through next year before we actually say, okay, this legit is not working. Because this year, again, this is like a, you know, we said before, there's a lot of people that picked us to go 2-10 or worse, right? I walked out of the Indiana State game and I heard Purdue fans going, well, let's go 0-11 now to finish the year. Woohoo. And it's like, okay, so like if that's kind of like the understanding and maybe the expectations for negative fans because of how tough our schedule is. we've got to see what the roster looks like through this offseason and give him another shot, like one last shot, because really it's more like his second shot. You know, we talked about before that he his offseason going into his first year because of how back, you know, behind the ball he was and backed up he was, didn't really get a true first year. This, you know, I think he gets halfway into next year. If it's still, if it's atrocious, then I think he gets the boot.
Hmm. Well, I'm not even saying the boo, but like, when is it fair to start to criticize the lack of defensive production?
If we have any game, go ahead.
I'll say, if you remember when he was hired, I mean, what was the fear among the fans? Is, you know, are we gonna have any offense? Are we gonna be the next Iowa? You know, and I mean, we led the Big Ten in a couple of categories offensively last season, but the defense hasn't been there. I mean, we're what, 105th in PFF right now in defense, and we were like 96th, 97th last season. I mean, to look at some of the teams who are ranked above us, right? UTSA, Georgia State, Middle Tennessee, Tulane, Southern Miss have better defenses than us right now, according to PFF. Now, I mean, there's obviously a strength of schedule disparity there, but I just find that interesting right now.
So something that I remember, and I thought about this before we went live, and I debated or not whether or not to ask it, but I'd like to get your guys' opinions. And I can't pull up the exact quote that I got that I heard from Bielema, but I remember when Walters came to Purdue last year, you know, there was the little bit of conjecture between Bielema and Walters online. And I remember leading up to the Illinois game, I remember seeing it somewhere. I can't remember exactly where, but something to the likes of Bielema basically saying, like, you know, he really was the brains behind that defense. It really wasn't Walters that was at the helm of that. And so, is there any part of us that feels like, and I'm not saying that I'm one way or the other, but is there any part of us that, seeing how like last year and now this year is going, is there any part of us that may believe that's somewhat maybe true?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, Illinois defense hasn't looked the same since Walters left. And I mean, they also haven't played the strongest of schedules.
They played Kansas, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean,
Kansas also lost again this week to UNLV. Yeah. So,
yeah. Well, when they played them, they were good. All right, on paper.
So, they were good when they played them. I just think that Illinois' defense. I mean, I think also they had a couple first round picks they were playing with too during that time period. Sidney Brown, who's the other guy who went to
Witherspoon.
Yeah. Johnny New. So like there are all these guys who were like first round talent that they had, which always is going to make your defense look better. I think the scheme is solid, and I think we have the players to execute it. It's just that all the ingredients are there. We're just not making stew yet. You know, they're just like, got everything we need, you know?
I think your question about the leash is a week to week thing. Not that his leash is week to week, but like if we go out and beat Oregon State, I mean, I guess there's a lot of possible outcomes at Oregon State. If we go out there and win by like three scores, you know, I think the majority of the fan base is like, oh, okay, we're good. Walters is our savior. You know, we beat him by a score and it's like, okay, all right, we're kind of back to level. Walters finds level. We go out there and we get ran out the stadium. I think there's people that are like trying to put yard signs in his front house or yard signs in front of a house to saying house for sale or moving or whatever. So it's,
yeah.
Which is just a really unfair way to judge, but that is unfortunately the. Well,
and that kind of goes with you pulled up his comment, but I want to pull up Cody's here. Do you think that Coach Walters and the players are sleeping less nights trying to figure out things in preparation for Oregon State? So I don't think coaches in general get a whole lot of sleep during the season. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're an undefeated team or whether you haven't won a game. I think coaches in general, because it is very much a week-to-week thing as a head coach, you know, from high school on up, really. It's a week-to-week thing. Like, what have you done for me lately? So, it's – the leash question is just loaded, So you're
good. Well, and I mean, it's a tough thing, too, because I want them to sleep. I want him to be well rested.
well, I think so, the players might, like, I'm getting nights before game, they might have trouble, but I don't think, yeah, they're going to get rest. They're going to get the rest they need.
So, just so you all know, I can't break it out by game, but, so Dylan Dieneman has dropped back in coverage 51 times, 84% of the time we've played man, which is a higher percentage than I would have thought. And yeah, the only reason I'm citing him is because he's had more dropbacks in coverage than anyone else.
Damon, that's almost kind of like what happened with the Cowboys against the Packers last year. Like we, you know, the Cowboys, I know you said most defenses aren't dominant, but the Cowboys last year were predominantly a man defense. Mm-hmm. And then Jordan Love sliced us up for a drive or two. And so we switched to a man, a zone coverage. And then he really went off. Like it just, that sealed the deal for us. Like that's what Notre Dame felt a whole lot like, was like we had one or two drives where they just like had their way. And you could tell the coaching staff knew immediately, like, okay, there's a problem. I know it's 14-0, but there's a problem. And so they tried to switch things up, and it just did not. It made it worse, made it 10 times worse. It was like there was a fire, and they thought, hey, here's a jug of something, throw it on there. Oh, that was gasoline. That was bad.
Now, do you think, and I know this probably really doesn't make much of a heck of a difference at all, but do you think there would be any difference whatsoever? Because I know Kane and Harrell are both always up in the box. Do you guys think that it would make any difference whatsoever if they were down on the sidelines?
I mean, I feel like you get a better view up in the box, but probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's been a thing in the past where, you know, a coordinator switch, but probably not as much. But there's an interesting comment here from Mr. Gold Fedora guy. Kickoff Saturday, 5:30 or 8 p.m. body time. As in, you know, what time the body's used to. You think that could be a factor? I think if it were 8:30 Pacific Coast time, I think it would be more of a factor. Not saying it won't be, but I don't think it's going to be. I mean, it would just be the same as if we had an 8:30 p.m. kickoff local, which I think the players should be prepared for.
Also, what was it? Shout out back to either it was Markell Jones or Chuck T when we had him on.
I think it was Markell. Because I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, and, it was Markell.
They said noon was actually less fun than playing a night game, because noon, then you're getting up and starting your day that much earlier. But a night game, the only thing frustrating about a night game, he said to players, is the fact that you're kind of waiting around a little bit more. Like you wake up
pacing
like,
around the hotel.
Yeah, you want to play, but like it's almost like you get more amped up at that point too, then, because you're like you've been waiting all day to go to like just bust out.
Yeah, and someone asked Dylan Thieneman today in an interview if you know, if there was an opportunity for camaraderie, let's say, with the travel, and he just, I don't know, he didn't really answer the question. He was just like, nah, we just need to like just stay
you guys
focused.
Gonna go sightseeing?
Yeah,
it's like they're, you know, going like a getting European on a tour or anything,
getting on a plane, flying, like will they like bond as a team? And like if you're not bonded as a team by now, I mean there's a problem.
There was a reporter that asked Walters a question. They're like, so do you think that the team's going to have some like more? It was like a bonding type question. I wonder if it's the same reporter, honestly.
Yeah, asked him
if there was more of a chance for the guys to like bond and get to know each other since they're going to be like in the hotel and everything. He's like, and he goes, well, we stay at hotel for home games too. So no.
It's only a 5-hour flight. Yeah, I've made that flight like three times in the last couple of years. It's not a whole lot of bonding, and I don't know about you guys, it's hard to talk on an airplane. It's kind of loud, you know. So, but let's talk about Oregon State for a few. Depth chart came out. The first thing I saw was Earl Culp's name on there in the absence of Derek Rogers. Name on there, and someone asked Ryan Walters about that. Did you guys hear that in the presser?
Yeah, it's an in-house issue.
Yeah, he said there's an in-house issue, and so it was funny because they said, "Oh, there's some changes in the secondary," and then he was like, "What changes are you referring to?" Like he wanted to be very deliberate in how he answered the question. But yeah, there's something going on there. Hasn't played a ton for Purdue this season, so there's nothing to miss, I guess, is what I'm getting at. No Nyland Green, but it sounds like there's a chance we could see him in the game. Which
he said
is shocking.
Yeah, said he is running now on grass. He's running around, and he said, you know, you can't completely rule him out. There's still that possibility that he could play Saturday if he continues well.
And he's so been
it sounds like it's, is it like a hamstring issue? Is that what it's
he
been?
He hasn't said. Okay. And then who was it that he said there was a soft tissue injury, Damon? There's someone.
Oh gosh. Whoever Nylon, it wasn't Nylon Green, whoever the other person was. Yeah, I don't remember. Was it
CJ Smith?
No, it was someone in the secondary. I feel like I should know this off the top of my head, but, or was it Alessandro? He said there was a soft tissue injury.
Yeah.
Another member in the secondary.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it sounds like he'll be a game time decision. It's unfortunate that I can't remember his name. Yeah, that's so no major shifts there. Everything else looks the same on the depth chart, which I guess we can be thankful for. No major injuries outside of the ones we just discussed. How do you all feel about this game? It's been talked about in the comments that they are very good at running the ball. And I mean, when you look at them on paper, that's the thing that sticks out is they do have a two-headed monster at the running back position. Their quarterback's been pretty solid. And not only are their running backs good, but they're experienced. And I think the one guy was it Jamius Griffin. It's actually what his second stint at Oregon State, if I'm not. Yeah. So he played 3 years at Georgia Tech, transferred to Oregon State, left, went to Ole Miss. Now he's back at Oregon State in his fifth year of playing.
So Nick, you can still come back. Anyway, go ahead.
I had a feeling if I brought that up that you might go there. I'm good to know that I was right. But, you know, we talked about it a little bit. But, yeah, here's a comment right here from Cody. I feel like it's a do or die game for us. Is it? I mean, it.
For fan interest, it's do or die. For fan interest, I think it's do or die. And what I mean by that is like if Russ said earlier, if we get ran out of the building, I think you could start to see some fan interest dip as far as like game days go. I think you could definitely see, you're definitely going to see some open seats against Nebraska. You know, if we get ran out of the building on Saturday. So I think keeping the fans into it, keeping the fans involved, Purdue has to, I think they have to win. Now, if they lose and it's just like a really close game, you'd be like, okay, well, you just kind of know what the season's going to be like then. And, you know, we're going to have to stick through it. But I think if, like Russ said earlier, if we get ran out of the building, I think you're going to start to see the attendance dip in at games and potentially start to see some flashbacks of, and I'm not saying, as far as the games go, as far as gameplay goes, but just like fan attendance and things like that, you might see some flashbacks. Now, that might take a little while to get down to, 36,000 people at a game, but.
Especially if the tickets already bought. And Purdue fans don't like necessarily to waste tickets.
Yeah, well, they also don't show up until the first quarter is already starting. That really drives me nuts.
First of all, like I know you talked about that too, and I meant to say it in the thread, but as I'm an old person, a lot of times I get way behind in the thread, and then I don't get a chance to comment the way I would want to on a previous subject. But I feel like a lot of games that I've gone to recently, whether it's a Purdue game or not, that's just the way the fan base is. Like Frank, I know you've gone to some U of L games, some Louisville games down here, and they're even worse. Like they will take till the end of their first quarter to fill out the stadium, and they never even fill out the stadium really. Yeah. Like I've went to tailgate there before, and go, what time's the game start again? And they're like 3:30, and I'm like, well, it's 3:25. Are we gonna try to go in there? And then you get up there, and then like there is a long wait to even get through the gate to get in there, and then they're like, oh, let's grab something deep. I'm like, it's going to be like the 2 minute warning in the first half by the time we get in our seats. Like what is going on here?
Yeah. So I'm the guy too, that gets there as soon as the gates open and I'm sitting in my seat waiting for the game to start.
Yeah.
So
I just don't think everybody's that way anymore. I think we're now the old crowd that does that. Like
Russ, this is not relevant, but it was driving me crazy at the game on Saturday. Cause this was happening constantly throughout the first quarter. People were like walking up and down the aisle stairs trying to figure out where their seats were. And they've got a tray full of drinks and like a pretzel, and they're like trying to get their phone. They're like, what row are we in again?
Notre Dame fans.
And I'm like, you need Notre Dame fans. You need to do that before you walk into the stadium. You need to know what section you're in, what row you're in, what seat. Don't start walking up the stairs. Then try to figure out that information. And half the time, they're in the wrong section. I'm trying to watch the game, and I've got some guy next to me hitting me in the head with his pretzel, trying to figure out which, seriously, pretzel, that's a true story, trying to figure out what
that's going to be a true clip.
Yeah. So it just, I don't know why it shouldn't bug me, but it does.
It also bugs me too when there's somebody that, like, they not only do they get to the game like later, like when the first quarter's going on, and then they're up every 5 minutes going back and forth, going to the bathroom, going to get a drink, going to do whatever. I'm like, oh my God, sit down. Don't move.
Yeah. It's especially at Mackey. Mackey is just not a place where you can eat at a game. Like, I've been to games before where people come back with like nachos and it's like an intense like conference game. Like, no.
Do you guys remember that? I think it was the Iowa Purdue game I got us tickets to, and I got that huge Powerade.
You spilled it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't sit with you all. I was at that game, but didn't sit with you guys.
I was Cody, my first diehard fan. Person.
Yeah, it was. Cody, diehard fan. He gets the Ross 8 at 8:30. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. There's a question here. Is this a traffic or thing or just fans? I've not been that way for a minute. I'm not sure what the.
I think he's talking about like fans filling in the seats and stuff.
Yeah, it's just fans. It's just people, like, I guess, want to tailgate, especially when it's a noon game. You know, if you get there like 11 o'clock, well, you want to tailgate for a little bit and you don't want to just like,
I guess,
have one drink and then run in there. So
it just sucked. It just sucks. Like, seeing the CBS broadcast, you hear the music, you're pumped up for the game. And like, you know, like, you've read it all online. It's like, oh, this is a sold out game. And then they pan to the stadium or they do an overhead shot. And it's like, 20-30% full.
But see, when you were texting about that during the game, the stadium was packed, and I was trying to send you all a picture, but it wouldn't go through. I'm like, no, like the whatever clip they're showing is not current; it's not live.
I was gonna say,
you gotta think, it was like a 20 or 30 minute clip.
Even like when they were like, as the game was like 5 minutes away, and like the student section was still just taking a minute to fill up. I don't know. I'm very much like a packed stadium when the game, as soon as that whistle blows, I want the whole place to just be jam packed.
So, yeah, but Russ is right. I mean, when we go to local games or local school Louisville here, the stadium's not full until the end of the first quarter. And I mean, I've been to a lot of games in recent years there. I don't think I've seen the stadium full. And I looked at their attendance, and they're averaging like 40 to 45,000.
That's going to be an interesting game here in a few weeks for them, though. Do they play Notre Dame at Louisville, or is
they,
it Louisville?
They play at Notre Dame. Yeah.
Notre Dame. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So just looking at, PFF's great. They do these, these matchups where it shows the every player, for each team, and then their like associated grade and like where they would line up on the field. But one of the big things that sticks out, Russ, is the they don't seem to have great upfront edge rush. And I think historically, when we've seen, when Hudson Card has time and he's not under pressure, he can do some awesome things. So to me, that seems like an area that offensively Purdue should try to look to exploit, and that's also assuming that we give merit to what these PFF grades have to say, which some people are kind of torn on that. But it looks like their D line is, I'm seeing some numbers, 631st ranked, 641st ranked, so far below average, let's say. And I feel like that bodes well for Purdue and the ability to pass the ball. Defensively, when we flip things around, their offensive line also looks really good, and our pass rush hasn't been great this season. So I think we're going to see it's going to be an interesting game. Does Purdue need to sell out to stop the run and hope that they pass, or I don't know what the defensive strategy will be, but I know for one thing, guys need to not over pursue. That was just the thing we saw a lot against Notre Dame, was just them exploiting an over pursuit and just be disciplined. And I feel like that'll go a long way. Cause I mean, how many times did we get hands on someone and we just couldn't tackle them? I mean, there were so many third downs where the narrative of this game could have changed drastically if we just showed up on third down, so that's the thing I want to see change. And I feel like if that does change, we'll be in a much better position.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of started to go where you went, where you start looking at the analysis and go, okay, two-headed running back, what's the trenches look like, blah, 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 blah. I don't think any of that means crap, to be honest. I think this is a 100% motivation game. This is a how bad do you want it? Like, do you still have goals this season you want to meet? Like, we just got embarrassed worse than any Purdue team in history, and this program has been around since the 1800s. So what are you going to do? Like, what's your response? Like, what do you, how are you going to respond to that? That's where the, you know, the camaraderie and the, you know, the teamwork and how do you feel and how do you feel about the name on the front of your chest versus the one on the back and versus the, what product looks like on the scoreboard. Like, how are you going to motivate yourself and get up for this game differently than what you did for Notre Dame? Because you got absolutely embarrassed in a rivalry game, a nationally broadcast game, a game that Walt circled, which I think I heard from, it was a Boiler Dowd on the Shout Boiler Sports, where one of the funniest comments that they heard from the weekend was, let's hope Walt doesn't circle any more games. I mean, I think a Gold Fedora guy said it, it's the way we play is do or die. You know, like, I know people feel like it's do or die, we have to win this game. No, it's do or die, we have to play like we want to play football this game. Play like you want to play Division I, Big Ten level college football. Because if you don't, then it's going to be a long conference season. Because we ain't played a conference game yet, right? So, like, you know, all our goals are still there conference-wise. Like, if we want to have a good conference season and shock some people like the Nebraskas or the Illinois or the teams we've been able to beat in recent years, we're going to have to show up against Oregon State and show that we actually have a team that could be capable of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think
I want to see the want. Go ahead, Damon.
No, yeah, you're good. Adding on to what you guys are saying, piggybacking off of that, you just want to see the desire. You want to see, I mean, Purdue is all about being the blue collar, overlooked, hardworking, feet to the, you know, pedal to the metal, hands to the grindstone. You are, or nose to the grindstone, whatever it is. You're working your ass off, and you are earning everything that you get. And that is what Purdue's built on. That is our everything, is that you don't take no for an answer. And I love, and I get chills every time I think about it, when Tyler Trent, and I promise this is all going to make sense, when Tyler Trent was going through his battle with cancer and they did the College Game Day thing and they interviewed David Blau and they said, how did he look when you guys talked to Tyler? And he said, he looked like a Boilermaker. He looked like somebody who's going to fight until there's no fight left. And like, that is a Boilermaker. And I hope that Walters reminds these guys what it means to be a Purdue Boilermaker. It's not just like, oh, it's a Big Ten school, it's got a really good education, you know, so if I don't go pro, at least I've got the Purdue name on. It's like, no, this is I can't even find the words for it, man. It's just passion. It is hard work, passion. You're gonna wake up before everybody else does. You're the first to get there, you're the last to leave. Like, that is what Purdue sports in general is built on. That's what our basketball team is built on. That's what our football team has been built on. That's why we're the den of defensive ends. It's why we are so many things, and we've had this history of being so many things, is because that is Purdue. We get the guys that have chips on their shoulders that want to show who they are, that they want to show that they're overlooked, and they go out there and they show it. And I think that these guys have an opportunity to show everybody, hey, last week was really a fluke. We're sorry. Let's get back to it. So I'm looking forward to this weekend still. I'm hoping that these guys come running out of the gates and ready to just put their foot on Oregon State's throat and to not let up. So I'm excited for it.
Check and make sure you got CW too, people. If you're listening right now and you want to watch.
That's so crazy.
It's on the CW. It's a little weird. So make sure you got a way to watch something on the CW by Saturday. Don't wait till the last second and realize you've got to add a certain package or a certain streaming, whatever, to get CW.
Comes right on after Seventh Heaven on the CW.
Right before.
I need to make sure that I have CW. That's. I'm glad you brought that up.
Hey, you're welcome,
Damon. That was a great monologue, by the way, man. That's got to be a clip right there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's just what Purdue football is. I mean, it's gritty, just like in your face, like just. I mean, that's what Purdue everything is. That's why we all love it so much, is it's just like, we might not be the best athletically. We might not be the best in this category, but we're going to work harder than you could ever think of doing. And that is what I think that a lot of us love about Purdue athletics, is it's these guys that come in there and they work their asses off. You know, Brian Cardinal, that's why people loved him, is he worked his tail off. Nobody was ever going to work harder than him at a basketball game. That's why people love Braden Smith. That's why people love Carson Edwards, is because they're 100%. That motor is always going, no matter how they feel, no matter how they, whatever, that motor is at 100% the whole time. And that's what Purdue is. And that's what I hope these guys wake up to and are ready to embody. Cause it's, I mean, when Purdue, as dumb as that sentence might sound, it's awesome. It can't be beat. And I think that's why we all love Purdue.
I think Carson Edwards is a really good embodiment of that, because he was under recruited. He only had like 4 or 5 D1 offers. People said he was too small, and I mean, he made a statement. He wanted to prove everyone wrong. So yeah, I don't think there's a better example than that outside of Tyler Trent. But
yeah,
Russ, you have me frantically checking to make sure I have CW now. I'm glad you said that. I did not realize the game was on.
I forgot CW about that too.
At least I helped one person. I helped the big brain, which, by the way, apologies for this last weekend as well, Frank. I know if it wasn't a bad enough beatdown on Saturday, that our fantasy league, I gave you a nice little beatdown there too.
Hey, I had Alvin Kamara too, and still lost that game.
My receivers. I'm on the very short list of people that beat a team in fantasy football that had Alvin Kamara on it. Yeah,
my team, complete opposite from last week to this week. Last week I couldn't get in. Marvin Harrison had 0.9 points. This week he goes off. Dude,
he showed up. He showed
DK
up.
DK Metcalf had a game too, so I was happy.
He had like 30 points in the first 2 minutes of that game or something like that. It was shout crazy.
Out. I know you've had this comment up for a minute, so I want to mention it for too long. Gopher Rover, I said, I'll be out the gate cheering them as they run out. You know, road fans are the real MVPs, man. Like, road fans, like, I think it means a lot to the team. I know, not to like toot our own horns, but like that Virginia Tech game, especially since it was Walter's first win, the day that it was being a long 6 hour plus delay, like, I think it meant a lot for those players to be able to come over and see a faction of Purdue fans that made that trip and stuck it out to like support them through that W. So I think road fans, even though it's a much obviously smaller crowd and smaller contingent, mean a lot to these players.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And we had that opportunity to cheer along with some of the players and celebrate with the players at the Virginia Tech game last season. That was awesome, man. That was so cool to just like have them run over to the small group of Purdue fans that, you know, were sticking it out behind the bench.
We're not talking about after the game, Damon. Don't say it.
Yeah, he knew exactly what I was going to talk about.
So I'm gonna give you one little kind of hypothetical question to think about or talk about after all that. So we obviously have our online EA College Football Dynasty that several of us are involved in, and we're talking about realignment in the next season because we're running up on the end of our this season. And I talked about on the huddle last week with JR. On the conference expansions and realignments and things like that, and how we have 4 teams now going to the Mountain West to join Oregon State and Washington State to try to rebuild that conference. And we're talking about what teams could they pick off or might think about going out there. Do you, as Purdue fans, how would you take it if you heard, hey, Indiana, Purdue, Northwestern, and Illinois are going to the Pac-12? Not do you think they should do it, not – like, would you want to push it? Like, if that just – because obviously we have no control of it really as fans. Like, we would just wake up to the announcement and be shocked by it like everybody else.
Not happy about that.
I'm just a traditions guy, so I would hate it. I mean, I wouldn't like it at all.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not – we're not in the traditional Big Ten no more, right? Like,
I know.
You know, the Big Ten we grew up with, now we've got, you know, not just Nebraska and Rutgers and Maryland, but now we've got, you know, Oregon, Washington – UCLA, USC, like.
I feel like I'm just now getting used to, like, Rutgers, Maryland, and Nebraska being a part of the Big Ten, too. Like, now that seems normal to me. Now it's going to be, you know.
And Penn State was in the 90s. You know, Penn State's not, you know, it's not like they're a lifetime or charter member either themselves. Well,
for me, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got a shout-out, Gold Fedora guy. He said he's one row behind the bench. He's going to be giving them love. That's awesome, man.
Heck yeah.
It's, like, the most – he is the true embodiment of a Purdue super fan right there. I mean,
so I think my answer really is I'm just along for the ride, man. Like, I'm going to be a Purdue fan, whether we're playing in the Conference USA or we're playing in the Big Ten. And, you know, if we ended up in a situation like that, where all of a sudden we go from a schedule of having to play Oregon and Ohio State and Michigan, you know, Notre Dame, whatever, to like, now we're playing Colorado State, Fresno State, San Diego State, Northwestern, Illinois, IU, it's like, oh, we might be a 10-win team now. Like on a good year, we might be a 10-man team. So it's kind of like, I mean, because we talked about how teams are trying to start shifting their focus to going, hey, this is a super conference with 18 teams, and you got the big programs, the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Oregons, the USCs, the Penn States, that we're just not – Purdue might have a flash in the pan year where we could get a lucky schedule and win 10 or 11 games. But, like, is that really going to happen realistically? Whereas if we get ourselves in a situation where we're in a conference like that, to now we can win 8 or 9 games every year and maybe have a 10 or 11 win year, like, to me as a fan,
that almost is like minor leagues, you know?
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Like, it's almost like minor leagues, man. Like, I don't, you know.
Yes and no, because, like, that conference, you're talking about that conference, Washington State and Oregon State were both ranked last year. Boise State is always one of the best group of five teams. Fresno State is an up-and-coming program. San Diego State is pretty regularly in and out of the top 25. You know, so it's like, and then we'd still have rivals like Indiana and Illinois and a Northwestern out there too. Like, it wouldn't be a power conference, but like, it'd be some good football and we'd be competitive.
A lot more opportunities to go to some good.
Who would we say that sucks now? But I guess we'd still be having IU in the conference if we would go off that. That's something too that like I wish they would stop that, and I wish that like whoever's running the third down the end of the third quarter stuff, like, read the room. Don't play shout if we're down by 55 or whatever it is.
I don't understand how much people are doing that, to be honest. Like, I don't understand. Like, I know that there's been times where it's good and there's a few people like it, but I feel like everybody that talks about shout hates it, or at least is like, whatever. Like, let's get something that gets people excited. Like, I don't.
Even that, like,
that thought IU sucks was hilarious. Like, not in a funny way. They were like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. They laughed a lot at that.
Yeah.
They don't know what it's like to have an in-state rival, though. So,
yeah. Well, before we wrap up, because I know we're well over our hour mark that we usually try to get off at, want to give a shout out to all of our sponsors in our network, the College Huddle. Make sure you check them out. You've got, I mean, any college that you're curious about their athletics, the College Huddle probably has that school already covered. They've got over 70 plus colleges covered in the College Huddle, ranging from, you know, any conference out there. So lots of really good stuff there. And then if you're really just a Big Ten guy, I mean, there's the Big Ten Huddle as well, which is like a sub, you know, thing of the College Huddle as well, and covers every single Big Ten team. All the new ones are in here as well. You know, if you want to bring a game out to your next tailgate, you can always get a blitz board. Cincy Blitz Boards, they can get you any team, any design that you can think of, anything that you can dream, they can probably make it happen. And then, of course, our guys, you know, once we get more into basketball, our guy over at College Basketball Analytics, we're going to be using that quite a bit to break down Purdue as the year goes on. And honestly, if you want to know the nitty gritty about Purdue and statistics and everything, if that's anything that interests you, College Basketball Analytics is a great place to check out. You can see kind of your baseline stuff, I think, right, Frank, without buying the pro plan. But if you get the pro plan,
you can see really one team.
And then if you get the pro plan, you can, you know, look up our opponents. You can look up all sorts of stuff there as well. So, and then, of course, Martin Vintage, you know, always go to martinvintage.com. Use code BXP at checkout for 10% off. Get you some nice apparel. They're extremely comfortable shirts. I love my Martin Vintage shirts. Very, very comfortable. And they really, you know, some of those shirts especially have quite a bit of design on them. And they, I feel like I'm going to sound really old saying this, but they do really well in the wash. So you don't have to worry about it all coming apart or anything. You know, in the washer and whatnot. So really, really good quality stuff there. And I think I've hit everything on the head as far as sponsors and everything else goes, but I'm sure Russ has one more thing to say. So Russ, take it away.
I actually was just typing that in our own thread. So just a PSA, not to really do with sports, but like the coaches shows tomorrow night, obviously we don't expect it to be very pretty, but I'm going to leave you with this. The way we talk to people and treat people should be a reflection of your own character and not what they deserve. Okay. It was a rough weekend. We all get that. But like, let's keep in mind that when you call in and you make your statement or you say what you're saying, you're reflecting yourself and your character as well. Like, you think you're attacking somebody, but like, just keep that in mind, right? Like, let's keep things in perspective. It's a game. It is a game. We invest a lot in it. We invest our time, our money, blood, sweat, tears, but nobody's more invested in it than they are. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, I appreciate that sentiment, Russ. Yes. Have common sense, people. You know,
I hope the guy that called in Matt Painter and asked him to shoot more three-pointers calls in and says, you need to throw more touchdowns.
Well, and that was when we were the number one team in the country. So I imagine what it's going to be like tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Or no, he said we shouldn't. Was it? He said we should stop shooting some threes.
He wanted more mid-ranges. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's basically like every shot is either at the rim or from three. And then that's.
I remember at that time I was like, yeah, I'm with that guy. Come on. That's because we were running into a little rut there.
Yeah. Not playing our best basketball.
I honestly, I'm looking forward to it. And honestly, I feel like that's how these guys should prep for it. Because I know like there's some players on, there's some coaches that are there. You know, Coach Walter is going to be. Honestly, you know what? If you hear some guy just go on a rant and just tell you everything under the sun, I feel like just prepare for it that way. Understand that that's going to happen, and in a weird kind of way, try to have some fun with it. You know, just I don't know what kind of PR coaching you could get for that, or like how to respond to questions like that. I'm sure that the players get, you know, some kind of talking to about that, but just know that that's probably going to happen, and you know, have fun with it, I guess, in a weird way. Just be ready for it, and you know, try to make the best of it that you possibly can. Part of me is also in the back of my mind, my cynical part of my brain is also like, well, Walters is getting paid millions of dollars. He can have somebody yell at him on the phone for an hour once. He'll be okay.
Got a comment here praising you for your little mini Russ rant, Russ. That's not really a rant, but also I got to tell Gold Fedora guy that I use a GIF. I say GIF instead of GIF that I have of him all the time. It's like a frequently used thing with like my friends.
Dude, you need to monetize that GIF, man. I don't know if that's even possible. Probably not, but I feel like that absolutely needs to be monetized somewhere.
Just know that you're used like at least once a week in my texting conversations. So thank you for that.
Also, guys, October is the last month. Now we're in September. October is the last month without college basketball, and then college basketball is back. So,
which is a pretty fun and also chaotic time for the Boiler Express podcast. We really have to stick to a schedule then. It's like, well, we got a football game we played, a football game coming up, a basketball game we played, a basketball game coming. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that goes because we've definitely expanded our length even with just football this year. You know, our pods are turning an hour and 20-minute long shows where now we're going to have to talk about that and probably a couple basketball games in the middle of it. So, you know.
We need our listeners and our commenters to keep us honest. Just like.
That's right.
Just said type out time, you know, and we'll see that. Okay, yeah, gotta cap it here, guys. Sorry.
Right. But all right, everybody. Well, let's all just hope for the best. You know, we're all going into Oregon State. Hopefully you're hopeful. Hopefully you are, you know, like us. We're ready to see these guys, you know, lay it on Oregon State and make us all think, wow, last week was just a really big fluke. I don't know who was out there last week, but that's not this team anymore. So let's hope that that's who we see. Let's hope these guys embody the spirit of what it means to be a Purdue Boilermaker. And let's just have fun with it. And make sure you have the CW. Make sure you have the CW so you can watch the game.
Saturday I do. Night. I checked. I'm good to go. You all should do all the right. same.
But if not, Frank said he'll give out his password and his account information so you guys can all watch it. So with that being said, though, we love you guys. We'll see you next week. Boiler up, hammer down.
Boiler up.